When Mama is gone for a day or two, what will the Cubs and Papa Bear do? Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and let's talk about the 80s. In the 80s, everyone had big hair. They wore big shoulder pads, talked on big phones, and ate big breakfasts at McDonald's. In the 80s, everyone wanted a pocket rocker. No one wanted whammies, and everyone wanted to kill Sarah Connor. The 80s were an era of Reaganomics, Glasnost, and MTV's remote control. In the 80s, we played video games on our televisions, rode our bikes with no helmets, and Tim Allen was only accessible on late-night talk shows. In the 80s, Rick Baker turned Michael Jackson into a wolfman, Steven Spielberg turned a walking raisin into Jesus, and John Hughes turned Michael Keaton into a star. The year was 1983, and a young John Hughes was being courted to write a TV movie about a man who had to take care of his kids while his wife was at work. Eventually, the movie was transformed into a theatrical release, and a relatively unknown comedy performer was cast in the lead. Mr. Mom went on to do modestly well in theaters and gave Hughes his big break in directing. It made Michael Keaton into a household name and continued Hollywood's bizarre efforts to make Martin Mull a thing. Its greatest lasting impact, however, was introducing the Mr. Mom trope into the American consciousness. See, at this time in American history, more and more women were re-entering the workforce after having children. This meant that household duties, including raising the children, were being divided more evenly between the mother and father of the house, or they should have been in any case. Mr. Mom was a reflection of the nation's increasing anxiety over the notion of the stay-at-home dad. The man who loses his position as the breadwinner of the family and, in effect, also loses his masculinity. The situation was always presented as a bit of a catch-22 in that if the man succeeded at his new role, he was effectively emasculated, but if he failed at it, he was a loser. Mr. Mom, the movie, attempted to frame the situation as a man learning the value of the work his wife had done by taking it seriously and living up to her example, but really, it all gets drowned in the endless slapstick and fantasy sequences and gets thrown away at the end anyway when, spoilers, he gets his job back and she returns to the house. Everything resets itself and the status quo is enforced. Now, the same year Mr. Mom hit theaters, a made-for-TV movie titled Wait Till Your Mother Gets Home was produced for NBC. It followed the same basic plot, was incredibly bland, and I seem to remember a lot of yelling in it. The point is, we were suddenly, as a nation, enamored of the idea of the stay-at-home dad. This evolved into the dad is a lovable screw-up character. I mean, he means well, but he can't even boil water. Better leave the real work, meaning the housework, to the women. This was reflected in the rise of the supermom character, seen on cards and t-shirts and aprons in malls across America. We don't want guys to leave their jobs, and we don't want women to go to work, so let's reframe the entire notion of housework as superheroism. And look, I'm not saying running a household is easy. I'm terrible at it, and it's not because I'm a man. It's because I'm terrible in general. What I'm saying is that we were so freaked out by the thought of men taking care of a house that we built a whole mythology around it just to keep gender roles from slipping into chaos. And this brings us, okay, that was a really long intro. This brings us to 1990s, the Berenstain Bears and Life with Papa, our third McDonald's Happy Meal book, and one that's filled with even more clues to the Bear family's future. So, even though it was released in 1990, Life with Papa was most likely written some years beforehand. I believe this to be the case because of a previous McDonald's book, The Substitute Teacher. See, The Substitute Teacher was an episode of the Saturday morning TV show back in 1985, 5 years before the book, which was almost exactly the same story, was released. Now, I think these were stories the Berenstains had been sitting on for a while. Also, they include characters from previous books that I'd thought forgotten, including their neighbor, the skunk. Remember him? Life with Papa also reflects the 80s anxiety about fathers returning to their homes to act in a housekeeping capacity. So Papa has a reputation of being the incompetent oaf among casual Berenstain Bear readers, which is a thing that I can claim exists even though it's the majority of everyone. Of the world. Everyone is a casual Berenstain Bear reader. Or you should be. Please, do not follow my example. But looking at the books, Papa is actually more bullheaded and impulsive than incompetent. He certainly doesn't seem to harbor any notion that Mama's job as the head of the house is beneath him or particularly easy, nor have we ever been given the indication that he doesn't understand the basics of taking care of his family. We know from Mama's new job that he can take care of things during times when she would normally be in the house. We've seen him mediate problems. We know from the Berenstain Bears Forget Their Manners that he knows how to clean the house. He's helpful and supportive, if sometimes a bit bullish. He's not, in effect, Mr. Mom. But assuming that life with Papa, and no, it's not in any way a takeoff on Life with Father by Clarence Day, was written in the mid-80s originally, it's a perfect example of the Mr. Mom archetype in action. Now, the plot is somewhat interesting. Cousin Bertha, and I'm not sure whose cousin she is, but most likely Mama's, Cousin Bertha is expecting a baby, and Mama wants to be there to help her out for the first few days after the birth. Now, a quick aside, that this is an awesome impulse on Mama's part and is a great example for young readers. Mama is demonstrating community in action by supporting a new mother. So good for you, Mama. That's a great impulse. She's hesitant about going, however, because she doesn't think anyone in the house is capable of taking care of the cooking, the cleaning, the shopping, and all the other things that need tending to. Papa is, I think, rightfully put off by the assertion that he couldn't handle most of these things, and he responds by bragging that he could do them half asleep with one hand tied behind his back. Now, Mama is ready to rip into him when the phone rings. Now, right off the bat, there's tension. Mama insults Papa to his face, he responds in kind, and a fight is about to break out, all within one small page. It's the most aggressive I've seen the parents toward one another, as Mama's words seem designed to sting, and Papa's response is completely dismissive. However, it fits perfectly with the outline of a movie or sitcom episode based on the Mr. Mom archetype. The husband is always dismissive of the wife's abilities, and the wife is always dismissive of the husband's abilities, and this is fine in an episode of King of Queens or whatever, but the Bear family has never tended in this direction. It's almost quaint, but it's very predictable. Now, before they can come to blows, Mama answers the phone. Bertha has given birth, Turns out it's twins, because the 80s, so there's no mandatory ultrasound, so they didn't know what the baby was going to be, especially if this was written in the mid-80s, yada, yada, yada. Twins! Mama figures Bertha really needs her help, hops in the car, and leaves. Now, it's an interesting conversation, by the way. Mama hears that Bertha has had twins, yells, "Twins!" and then hangs up. Then she says that Bertha needs her help and makes up her mind to go. She never actually asks Bertha if Bertha needs help. Just keep that in mind. Papa is left with his wounded pride and decides to take it out on the house. He's going to take care of things in as destructive a manner as possible. First, he beats the rugs next to Mama's clean laundry, which gets the laundry filthy, so Papa decides to leave it outside to get rained on. Okay. Next, Papa makes honey mustard pancakes for the cubs, but he flips the pancakes onto the ceiling, scrapes them off, and serves them uncooked. Like, he's not a complete idiot. He knows not to serve his kids garbage off the ceiling, all right? And what's a honey mustard pancake? And why have the cubs never heard of them before? This smacks of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle ha-ha-ha gross pizza toppings humor, only honey mustard pancakes sound enough like a real thing that I'm confused if it's supposed to be legitimately gross or if it's just supposed to be a weird thing kids think sounds gross, but it all ends up scraped off the ceiling anyway and the moment moves on. Then, Papa tries to light a fire, but he leaves the flue closed so the house fills with smoke, and wait, I'm sure Papa has lit a fire before. Then he tries to put the fire in the fireplace out by beating it with the pillow, which explodes, and what is happening? Why did he try to put out a fire with a pillow? So now the house is filled with smoke and feathers, and pancakes are on the ceiling, but mostly the stench of Papa's failure and confusion. What's happened to this man? Was he undone by his own hubris? Was he a victim of a prank? Is he drunk? Everything that has occurred so far is wildly outside the boundaries of Papa's usual shenanigans. He's gone way, way beyond his shtick, and is actually something of a menace to his family's safety. Not even early days Papa was this bad. Remember, Papa frequently screws up by jumping into things unprepared, but he's good at the things he's good at. I can't even wrap my head around this version of the character. Again, if it's aping the tropes of the Mr. Mom scenario, it makes sense. So it's not in character, but as a trope, it makes sense. He's playing a part, just not the part of Papa Bear. But what happens next? Mama calls. Turns out, Bertha doesn't need her help after all, and she's coming home right now. Remember how Mama didn't ask Bertha before she drove over there? It turns out, Mama was acting presumptuous as well. Also, Bertha's neighbors are helping Bertha out. And who should knock at the treehouse door? It's Mr. Skunk. Now, we haven't seen or heard from Mr. Skunk in years. 6 years, to be exact. It was 1984's The Neighborly Skunk that introduced the character. And remember my theory that these books were penned in the mid-80s. Here's more proof. If Stan and Jan had intended these books to follow immediately after the initial mini storybooks, this story would slot right into the timeline. So would next week's book, but we'll get to that next week. So, Mr. Skunk has seen the smoke and called together all the forest animals to come help Papa clean up. Raccoons, frogs, birds, butterflies, squirrels, everyone comes to Papa's aid. They clean the house before Mama gets home, and she's amazed at how beautiful the house looks. Papa never owns up to his mistakes, and I guess he threatened the kids to keep quiet. The end. So it's not a good book. The slapstick isn't funny. The problems Papa faces aren't realistic. The situation just explodes, and then the solution comes out of left field and no one learns anything. Unless, that isn't the point of the book. Now, the opening moments in this book involve the cubs looking through old photo albums at pictures of themselves as babies. The events of this story could take place either before or after the attic treasure. Regardless, the theme of picture albums reminding the Bear family about the very nature of their unit is pervasive throughout both books. Another theme, new babies. Twins in Cousin Bertha's case, but in the attic treasure, the specter of a new baby is also brought up. The possibility of extending the Bear family's nuclear unit. In fact, I'd go so far as to put this book before the attic treasure, as that book seems to build on the theme of birth and, I guess, cleaning that was started in this one. And what of the Mr. Mom theory? Life with Papa works very well in this regard. It even has the typical "ain't I a stinker" ending so common in these narratives. Papa gets away with it, and the status quo remains unspoiled. I'm not going to go too far into it right now, but the book makes more sense when it's viewed as a piece of a four-part puzzle. Speaking of which, next week, the Berenstain Bears meet some new neighbors. Not the new neighbors. That book has a few months to go. But some new neighbors. Some eager neighbors. Some real eager beavers, you might say. Because they are beavers. Also, I'm going to take a look at all four at McDonald's Happy Meal books and see if I can't figure out a real timeline for them. A preferred reading order, if you will. Finally, we'll see if they fit within the timeline proper, if they belong in an alternate timeline, or if they exist outside of time in their own pocket universe. All these questions and more next week as we close out the McDonald's Happy Meal saga with the Berenstain Bears and the eager beavers. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to diving back into alternate timelines, perhaps, and figuring out how these books serve as a unit. And if I'm feeling up to it, maybe I'll try to work them into the mini storybook timeline as well. We'll see. You can find me at berenstainbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find me on Twitter at bstainbearcast. You can write to me at berenstainbearcast@gmail.com. Or you can go to iTunes and subscribe. Whenever you subscribe to our show on iTunes, it clicks us up a little bit in the old stack 'em ups, the lineups, the what do you call it, the frou-fra, the hoo-ha, the numerologies, whatever they do at iTunes. I don't know. It helps. You don't even have to listen through iTunes, but a subscription does help. Otherwise, next week we're finishing off this quartet with the Berenstain Bears and the Eager Beavers. My name is Phil Gonzalez. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week deep in Bear Country.